It's 1:06 Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Jim Meadows, filling in for Celeste Quinn today. Henry Frain is our technical director. And in this hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we will be talking about a topic which may seem morbid or macabre. Well, I guess it is morbid and macabre. It is about the deep fear which struck apparently quite a few people in the 18th and 19th centuries. The fear of being mistaken for dead and being buried alive. Dr. Jan Bondesen, who is a medical doctor with a PhD in experimental medicine, he is a professor at the University of Wales College of Medicine at Cardiff, has written a book essentially about the history of this fear. It's called Buried Alive: The Terrifying History of Our Most Primal Fear, and it's just been published by W.W. Norton. Dr. Bondesen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Okay. Am I reaching you in Cardiff or in someplace else?
I'm actually in Newport now, which is almost next to Cardiff in Wales, in South Wales.
Well, you're one of our more physically distant guests, but this is a topic which at one point concerned an awful lot of people and I guess may still concern some people. But when and where did the idea and the fear of being buried alive first spring up?
Well, for that fear to spring up, you need an enclosed space to wake up in after death. So it was the introduction of the wooden coffin for all classes of society in the 17th century that was the basis of it. And worried people, of course, got the idea, what would happen if I am not really dead when I'm put in the coffin? What would happen if I wake up in a sealed coffin underground?
It's something we take for granted, the coffin, but it was essentially a new piece of modern technology in the...
Well, coffins for the wealthy were used already in the Middle Ages, but for poor people in the 16th century, there was like a death hamper or just a stretcher where the corpse was taken off to a pit and bundled down without any ceremony.
Well, there was the fear, as you mentioned it, and there came to be tales circulating, what seemed to be very credible tales at the time of people who had undergone this horrible experience.
Yeah, some of the tales were like urban legends that have survived even to our days. Like, for example, the wealthy lady who is buried with her wedding ring on her finger and a wicked sexton of the church decides to dig up her coffin and steal the ring, and he does so in the middle of the night, and he opens the coffin lid and he grabs her hand and tries to pull off the ring, but the finger has swollen, so he decides to cut it off. But when he cuts into the finger, the blood flows and the lady sits up with a groan. And that tale was repeated with many different variations, particularly in Germany.
And this came to be not simply the matter of urban legends, which are circulated essentially as legends, but also news reports, even medical reports, which were circulated with some credibility at the time.
Yes, in the 1740s, a French doctor called Jean-Jacques Bruyère published a book about the risk of being buried alive and the uncertainty of the science of death. And he listed 56 cases of premature burial or dissection and 125 narrow escapes. And Bruyère concluded that all the currently used signs of death were unreliable, and the only reliable one was actually putrefaction. So you were not really dead until you were both dead and rotten.
I'm going to read just a short passage at this point from an author you mention in your book, and that's Edgar Allan Poe, who used the theme of premature burial more than once. And this is from a story called The Premature Burial, in which he asks, I guess, a rhetorical question. And to quote here, "To be buried while alive is beyond question the most terrific of these extremes which has ever fallen to the lot of mere mortality. That it has frequently, very frequently, so fallen will scarcely be denied by those who think. The boundaries which divide life from death are at best shadowy and vague. Who shall say where the one ends and where the other begins. Edgar Allan Poe, of course, was writing fiction, but he was drawing on fears which were quite widespread at the time.
Indeed, he did, and he reacted to what he perceived as the medical realities of his time. And there was a good deal of writing in American magazines and even in medical journals in Poe's time about the signs of death being unreliable and people being in immediate risk of being buried alive.
And that brings up an interesting question, the state of medical science then and how it developed during this period. And what did people know about when death occurred and how to detect it?
Well, there were a lot of crude tests of life, like, for example, burning the soles of the feet with a candle or with a red-hot iron even, or bending back the nails, or plunging a sharp pointed pencil up the nostril of the presumed corpse, or even pouring urine into the corpse's mouth, or putting a crawling insect into the ear.
We're getting into grisly material here, and what fascinated you about this topic that led you to research it for a book?
Well, I started looking into it already in the late 80s, after I read a book called L'Homme devant la mort by the French philosopher Philippe Ariès. And he had a brief chapter about the French fear of being buried alive, and I decided to complement that by looking into the medical literature from the time in question, which was a source which Ariès had not been able to access. And I had a brief chapter about premature burial in my earlier book, Cabinet of Medical Curiosities, which was published in 97. And after I had taken part in an American TV documentary on the subject, I decided to expand this chapter into a full-length book.
And there was a lot of material out there, apparently waiting for the researcher. This was, you know, we compared it to an urban legend, but this was something which was apparently in parts of Europe and America in the mainstream of thought of social concern. And at the same time, at other points, it was perhaps a little more of a cranky fad. Where was it one, and where was it the other?
Well, for example, in Germany in the late 18th century, premature burial was considered one of the most burning medical topics of the time, and many people were deeply afraid of being buried while still alive, and there was a stream of medical literature, and the medical establishment actually accepted that putrefaction was the only certain sign of death, and in many of the larger towns, people built Leichenhäuser, or waiting mortuaries, where corpses could be incubated until they were black and putrid. And not until that had happened could anyone be buried.
This was one of the most curious phenomenons I read about in the book, that major cities had these facilities. You actually quote a passage from Mark Twain, writing from, it's actually from Life on the Mississippi.
Yes, yes.
A book which takes picked it out, takes a curious detour over to Munich, Bavaria, in the second half, where Mark Twain visited one of the waiting mortuaries in Munich. And I guess in the 1880s, when Mark Twain researched the book, the idea was a little past its prime, but these were still operating. Let me read just the passage here from Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi, as you quoted. It was a grisly place, this spacious room, and there were 36 corpses of adults in sight, stretched on their backs on slightly slanted boards in three long rows, all of them with wax-white rigid faces, and all of them wrapped in white shrouds. Along the sides of the room were deep alcoves, like bay windows, and in each of these lay several marble-visaged babes, utterly hidden and buried under banks of fresh flowers, all but their faces and crossed hands. Around a finger of each of these 50 still forms, both great and small, was a ring. And from the ring, a wire led to the ceiling, and thence to a bell in a watchroom yonder, where day and night, A watchman always sits alert and ready to spring to the aid of any of that pallid company who, waked out of death, shall make a movement for any, even the slightest movement, will twitch the wire and ring that fearful bell. That's Mark Twain from Life on the Mississippi, describing one of the waiting mortuaries in Munich, Bavaria. And this was accepted by the mainstream of medical science in Germany, at least.
Yes, there were mortuaries like this in Austria, Holland, and Belgium as well, and in Denmark. But they never caught on like they did in Germany. In Germany, they even built new mortuaries in the 1860s and 70s with electrical warning systems instead. They built one in Vienna even with a huge ward for this hospital for the dead with electric warning system and a large board for the watchman so that he could see which corpse had actually triggered the system, just like a hotel waiter waiting for the guests to ring for room service. There was a smaller mortuary next door for suicides, and this lacked the alarm system.
Are any of these, I understand the mortuaries are not in use as such right now, any of these buildings still standing?
There is one in The Hague, which I have visited, the old Scheindodenhuis, or the house for the apparently dead in the Algemeen Begraafplatz in The Hague. It's nowadays used as a cemetery office building. But you can still you can still get an idea of where they kept the corpses and how the heating system worked and so on. So, and that's probably a unique survival.
I'm talking with Dr. Jan Bondesen. He's a professor at the University of Wales College of Medicine at Cardiff, and he has a particular interest in medical curiosities, as you can tell by some of his books. A Cabinet of Medical Curiosities, where he first took up this subject, The Fiji Mermaid and Other Essays in Natural and Unnatural History, The Two-Headed Boy and Other Medical Curiosities, and his newest book, Buried Alive, The Terrifying History of Our Most Primal Fear. It's published by W.W. Norton. We invite your calls and questions for Dr. Bondesen. Our number here at The Afternoon Magazine is 217-333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And you can call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Dr. Bondesen, what does this phenomenon, and I guess I should say this fear in society at the time, say about the attitudes towards death at that time?
Well, to begin with, the fear of premature burial was a consequence of the de-Christianization in the 18th century. People no longer accepted a traditional dogma that the soul left the body and you were either dead or alive, and death happens instantaneously. And instead, people thought of a process of dying, a lingering death, and people started to worry whether the doctors were really able to differ between death and life. And there were certainly quite a few stories in both the medical journal and the lay press of fatal mistakes. Corpses waking up in mortuaries or waking up in their coffins on the way to the funeral. And that, of course, fueled the fears quite strongly.
We're going to take a caller now. This is from a line 4, a caller from Robinson. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I would like to ask the man from Cardiff if he's ever heard of a similar occasion to this. A relative of relatives of mine in Terre Haute, Indiana, about 1918 or so, had it specified in his will that he should be buried with a live telephone in the coffin so that he might phone up and let them know he hadn't died. This was published on the front page of a Terre Haute newspaper at the time.
Yes, I have heard similar stories, and there was even a rumor that Mary Baker Eddy had been buried in a vault with a telephone put on a small dressing table next to her. That's probably not true, but Certainly in 1908, a wealthy Louisiana lady named Mrs. Pennard, who greatly feared a live burial, was buried in a security vault equipped with air holes, and a telephone connected to the cemetery keeper's house was put on her bedside table.
Yeah, I see. This man's name was Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, and he was a wealthy, rather eccentric man. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you, caller. And it does sound like there was a period when there were people of means who had this fear of being buried alive and did something about it, or tried to, anyway.
Yes, in London at about the same time, there was a Society for the Prevention of Premature Burials, and they had a doctor employed who cut the head off of every member before they were buried, so to prevent any risk of them being buried while still alive.
I guess the fear then was more of the suffering than anything else, and the hope for in some cases there was pretty much giving up in any hope for being revived and rescued.
Yes, but there's not a great chance of that when you're on a coffin under 6 feet of earth.
Well, the waiting mortuaries, that was the point, the possibility of revival
being
and rescued.
Yes.
And this brings up the question, did they work?
Well, they certainly worked in a way that they were technically quite advanced, but there is no reliable case upon record that anyone actually woke up in any of these mortuaries. And a French author in the 1840s could actually... He actually saw details of more than 40,000 corpses who had been passing through the waiting mortuaries in Frankfurt, and not a single one of them had woken up. And it cost quite a lot of money to have watchmen on duty and putrefying corpses in huge hospital wards. And also it was a disgusting spectacle. It certainly wasn't really... conducive either to aesthetics or respect for the dead, to have black, rotten, swollen corpses lying next to each other on corpse beds with strings around their fingers and toes connected to bells.
You write about another device which was promoted as a way to avoid the risk of premature burial. Which is, I guess, to us just as odd as the waiting mortuary, and that's the safety coffin.
Yes.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the safety coffins were invented, most of them, in the 19th century, and many of them were from Germany or from the United States. And one of the earliest ones were invented by a German doctor called Adolf Gutsmuth, and it had an air tube from the coffin up to above ground, and a string connected to a bell so the prematurely buried person could ring the bell to call for attention and open the air tube to get air to breathe. And there was also a feeding tube inside, a larger tube, so that while they were disinterring the coffin, they could administer food and drink to the prematurely buried person down in the coffin. And Dr. Gutsmuth, he demonstrated his coffin by having himself buried alive in it. And he had a meal of beer and soup and sausages administered through the feeding tube, and he made a philanthropic speech through the coffin's speaking trumpet to a crowd of onlookers above ground.
There were, you write about several variations of the safety coffin, but I get the impression they never really caught on as the waiting mortuaries had in Germany.
No, they were too expensive, and also the mechanisms were very sensitive in some of them, and the natural decay of the body would actually trigger the mechanism in some instances, which would have led to quite distressing situations in the churchyard with the flags waving and little bells ringing and the gravediggers rushing over to dig up the coffins or caskets full of rotten corpses.
How seriously were they taken at the time?
Well, their inventors took them very seriously indeed, but there was always a hint of the ludicrous about the entire endeavor of constructing security coffins, and there's no record of any of them actually going into serial production. But still, the fear of premature burial was so considerable at the time that there was definitely a market. But one should think, though, that the presumed customer for one of these coffins, an individual fearful of premature burial, would certainly think the disturbing thought that if he woke up in a coffin of this kind with a permanent air supply, he could live for a long time. And what if some mischievous boy had stolen the bell above Earth, or if the rope to the bell came off in his hands? And that was not a very nice thought, and that's probably the reason why these coffins never really caught on.
The fear, the fear in society, in Europe and America at the time of premature burial, what sort of effect did that have on medical science at the time? Did it spark research into the questions of when death occurs and how it can be detected? Or did it hinder medical science in some ways?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because in Germany it did nothing of the sort, because there the medical profession had handed away the power to determine life or death to the waiting mortuaries. They had admitted their ignorance. So in Germany there was very little research, and nor was there much research worthwhile in England, because here the entire question was taken quite lightly, and it was just considered like German and French hypochondriacal tendencies and excitable stories about people being buried alive. But in France there was a very vigorous debate about the whole question. There were appeals to build waiting mortuaries, but they were opposed by medical science. And there were also several academic prize questions about new and improved science of death. And one of these in 1846 was won by a Frenchman called Eugène Bouchou, who suggested that the recently invented stethoscopes should be used to determine whether the presumed corpse had a heartbeat or not. And he won 1,500 gold francs for this idea, and it rapidly caught on all around the world.
So that was an example there of genuine progress being made, and perhaps this this phenomenon having a part with hastening it.
Yes, mm-hmm. In France that certainly was the case, and one should also consider though that the several French noblemen and magnates actually donated money to the Académie des Sciences to have prize questions of this kind put up, so that medical scientists and inventors would be stimulated to consider the question of the uncertainty of the science of death.
Even in the most apocryphal tales that you relate from this time, there does seem to be a tendency. The premature burial and the apparent but not actual death seem to occur in certain types of instances rather than others, and maybe that brings up the question of medically when these things might actually occur.
Yes, and in particular, there was a danger in the cholera epidemics, because in the cholera there is a stage called the cold stage, where the individual can get very, very death-like without losing the chance of ultimate survival. And also in an epidemic like that, many people have to be buried during quite a short period of time.
That was another factor which seemed to come up in these tales, is that many of these burials had been handled relatively hastily.
Yes, and that was another good thing that came out of the whole idea and Bruyère's book in the mid 18th century, that it became customary throughout the civilized world to wait a day or two between death and burial, and that has certainly not been the case before.
Mm-hmm. I've been putting off asking the question of simply whether or not it really happened, whether or not any of these cases of apparent but mistaken diagnosis of death and premature burial were really true.
Well, I found three or four true instances from the 19th century. One of them concerns a young French woman who was presumed to have died from the cholera, and she was buried quite quickly after just a few days, and after just a few hours. She was put in a grave 6 feet deep 5 hours after she appeared to have died. And it's not mentioned whether she was actually examined by a doctor or if a priest allowed this hasty funeral. But when the earth was poured onto the coffin, she knocked against the coffin lid. And this was fortunately heard by the gravedigger, and the woman was brought out alive.
So in all of your research of what must be in the literature, hundreds of tales popular and even in a serious medical context, you're only sure of three or four.
Yes. Well, there was such exaggeration at the time, and actually the newspapers actively invented cases, in France in particular, when the agitation against premature burials was at the high point. The newspapers actually fabricated cases to speed up their appeals for burial reform.
And at the same time, you're pretty sure that there were other cases which may have seemed like a premature burial, but actually were not.
Yes, the people at the time didn't have the knowledge of forensic medicine. For example, if a corpse or a skeleton was found with the arms and hands drawn up as to push against the coffin lid, that was interpreted as being buried alive and trying to push up the lid, but a contraction of the arms like that can take place post-mortem. And also, if a corpse was found with the fingers missing, they thought that they had been buried alive and ignored the fingers in its agony. But in reality, that was probably due to rodents attacking the dead body, gnawing a hole through the casket and then feeding from the corpse, because they always start from the fingers and work their way up.
Well, you managed to delay the payoff well enough in the book as to what may have actually happened in the midst of all these reports. But I was wondering, as you were doing the research, was there ever a time that you thought, well, maybe there is something to all this?
No, there wasn't really, because modern forensic science explains so many of these old boogaboo tales of skeletons or corpses found in contorted positions in the coffins. And also so many of the case reports were invented or exaggerated by the activists campaigning against premature burials in the 19th century, because these individuals were quite ruthless, and they certainly thought that any means were acceptable to further their course.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with Dr. Jan Bondesen, a professor at the University of Wales College of Medicine at Cardiff. He's talking to us from Newport in Great Britain, and he is the author of Buried Alive: The Terrifying History of Our Most Primal Fear. It's a new book just published by W.W. Norton and Company in New York and London. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Bondesen, please call us here at the Afternoon Magazine. Our numbers are 333-WILL, or call toll-free at 1-800-222-WILL. We're talking here more than, rather than, not so much a medical phenomenon, although there certainly was an impact on medical science, but a social phenomenon, and how fears arise and how a society takes them in. And I was wondering if you look around at society today and look at the fears and anxieties that people have today, and are there any fears which you think are circulating in the same way that the fear of being buried alive circulated in the 18th and 19th centuries?
Well, that's a difficult one. I wouldn't say on such an enormous scale. I wouldn't say in such an enormous scale, because there were hundreds, if not thousands, of articles and hundreds of books published on the question of premature burial and the uncertainty of signs of death. And in France alone, there were 100 medical theses dedicated to this question in the 19th century. And the writings in lay magazines and literary aspects are very, very considerable during the same during that period of time. So it's hard to say what the fears in today's society will be. Will be wondered at and maybe laughed at in 100-150 years' time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing you notice that the fear of being buried alive dwindled away in the 20th century, and what do you think was the cause of the change?
Well, ultimately it was the increased confidence in the medical profession, really, and it also as a consequence of Bourdieu's idea that one should listen to the heartbeat, that became generally accepted among the medical profession, and they closed ranks against it. Germany shut down their waiting mortuaries in the 1890s. And also, after the First World War, people seem to have taken much less interest in this question. And the organized anti-premature burial movement in England and France collapsed at the same time.
Was it, do you think, the World War itself, which... because of its horrific impact on Europe, may have put things in a different context as to what
it certainly appears as if that was the case. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do we know now about the point at which death occurs and about detecting it and possibly reviving people who may be only apparently dead?
Well, I mean, in the newspapers there are cases all the time about people waking up in mortuaries or after being declared dead. And some of them are true and some of them are not, because people being falsely declared dead is still one of the popular newspaper myths, both in Britain and in the United States. But there are definitely true cases. There was one in the United States a few weeks ago of a woman waking up in a mortuary after taking an overdose. And indeed, a young Frenchman in the 1970s, he took an overdose of barbiturates outdoors in freezing cold weather, and he was taken into hospital, and there was no heartbeat and no respiration, and the ECG was totally flatline, and the man was declared dead, and the forensic specialist saw him, and the funeral director saw him, and he woke up when the coffin... The lid was fastened onto his casket in the mortuary. So he very, very narrowly escaped being buried alive just 20 or 30 years ago. And there are some similar cases from the 20th century of people very narrowly escaping burial alive after taking overdoses of sedatives outdoor in a cold climate. So they come in with the concomitant hypothermia.
It's interesting, two reoccurring factors here, the barbiturate overdoses and hypothermia.
Yeah.
Do you think there may be other cases which have occurred but have been not recorded? And do you think that, on the whole, proper precautions are taken?
I certainly hope so, because in the 60s and 70s, the medical profession wasn't really aware of this possibility, that a person could come in to a hospital in a state of very deep coma induced by the sedatives and the hypothermia, and they could actually have absence of reflexes, absence of heartbeat or respiration, a flatline ECG, and even a flatline EEG, but that individual would still have the potential to wake up without much in the way of treatment, even.
The flatlining, I think we're getting into the concept which the 19th century did not have of brain death.
Yes.
And does that concept bring with it new fears of premature burial?
Well, there was a brief premature burial scare in Germany in the 60s and 70s, which is difficult not to link to the introduction of brain death criteria. And for a person with a lingering fear of premature burial, the image of the doctor wetting his scalpel near the unconscious body of an accident victim, ready to harvest the organs from this dead person whose heart was still beating, that was not a pleasant thought exactly. And also the media, some of the media were quite irresponsible when the brain death criteria were introduced in the late 60s. There was some sensationalist writing, but people's confidence in the medical profession was much higher at this time, and the acceptance of the brain death criteria went really quite smoothly, one must say.
Mm-hmm. You write, going back to the heyday of the fear of premature burial, you write about observations in the 19th century, what was taken to be the death trance, and I don't know if I can pronounce the German here correctly.
Scheintod.
The Scheintod. And you write that it seems to have existed when it seems to have actually occurred. It's what you call a hysterical disorder.
Yeah, which the lucid lethargic hysteria, it was called in the 19th century. And there are no modern cases upon record, but there are quite a few of them from the 19th century, always young women who could fall into a death-like trance. And the doctors had to be really careful not to declare them dead.
I found that to be very curious, that this is essentially a psychological phenomenon, obviously with dramatic impacts on the body in order to change things such as respiration and pulse.
Yes, that's very curious.
And you believe that these instances did actually happen?
Yes, there's good evidence from reliable medical reports from the time that they did happen. But there's nothing in the modern medical literature.
I want to take a caller now. We have another caller coming in from Urbana on line one. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Fascinating topic. It sure provides us with some great stories. But my question concerns the ritual of the wake and what this has to do with your topic. I know that as late as the 1940s in rural areas in the United States, oftentimes the corpse would be laid out in the parlor, and usually women of the family would sit around it in a circle and stay up all night with the body. And I also have a friend who was from Belgium who talked about when his mother died, how they had his mother actually in the house for a few days where her body did begin to decompose. And I was just wondering what the relationship was between, say, the modern wake that we have now and the fear of being buried alive.
Well, one of the original purposes of the wake was to make sure that the dead individual was really dead.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the functions of the wake was like an observation period to exclude the possibility of live burial.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and the funny thing was, by the 40s, the body would be brought from the mortuary already embalmed, yet still folks would stay up all night with the body.
Yes, it's devolved into just a ritual instead of actually mm-hmm. fulfilling a purpose
okay.
like it used to.
Yes, I just want to know if that's where the roots of the wake stem from.
Well, at least it was one of the purposes. Another one was certainly like a formal saying goodbye to the dear departed. That, I'm sure that must have been one of the purposes already from the beginning. But another purpose was certainly to prevent people being buried alive.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, caller. And that brings up the question of embalming, which certainly once that happens, there's the chances of premature burial will be greatly reduced.
Well, they will be zero, wouldn't they? I mean, that was one of the points of the advertisements from the 19th century American funeral directors. They boasted that no one who had been through their embalming shop could be buried alive, because then you were really a goner, weren't you?
There's something a little cold about that, about the use of embalming as the way to make sure that someone was really dead.
Well, it was one of the reasons that embalming became so widespread in the late 19th century, the fear of being buried alive. And that was one of the arguments of the funeral directors of using embalming at the time.
You mentioned the impact of the World War, but what in general would you say is different about our culture that we no longer think much or worry much about premature burial?
Well, one factor is the increased confidence in the medical profession. Another factor is that there's no longer an organized movement of people actually campaigning against premature burials and publishing articles and letters, and no one today even acknowledges the problem. So it's like a non-subject, it's a damned subject today. And even the history books doesn't mention that just 150 years ago, many doctors were still uncertain whether their patients were alive or not. So people have actively tried to forget about the shameful past of the medical profession, that they couldn't tell whether their patients were dead or not.
Do you think there's also any reflections about how people in our society handle death these days as compared to the 19th or 18th
centuries?
Well, I
mean, many people today have never even seen a corpse, except for the travesty that comes out from the mortician's beauty parlor. And the distance between the living and the dead is greater now than it's ever been before. And the general attitude of people in the Western world, hyperactive, egotistical people intent on accumulating money and luxury goods is not really conducive to contemplation of the afterlife and gloomy thoughts about death and burial and even premature burial.
Well, your book, Buried Alive, essentially looks at Europe and America. Did this question take on a different pattern, or has it even appeared in other parts of the world and other cultures?
It spilled over a little bit from Europe to South America. But I have no instances whatsoever from either Asia or from Africa.
So it seems to be the effect of what was certainly the most developed culture at the time in the 18th and 19th century, but it seems so far to have skipped the rest of the world. Do you think it's something that could surface someplace? Or is it, as you say, a damned idea?
It's a damned idea today. Although one should consider that the criteria used in some third world countries for declaring people dead are about the same as those used in Germany and France in the 19th century, where people were definitely being buried alive.
I have one final question for you, Dr. Bondesen, and that is the reaction you've gotten to this book because of the subject matter and because everybody so many people are a little wary of thinking directly about death. How have people reacted to this book?
Well, it's only just been published, so it's a bit hard to say. The reactions I have had so far have mostly been astonishment that this has really happened, that so many people were afraid of being buried alive just 150 years ago. And I suppose that's a reaction to medical historians treating this as a non-subject. Certainly nothing to be proud about for medical science.
Well, it's a fascinating subject and a fascinating book. Dr. Jan Bondesen, I want to thank you for being our guest this hour on the Afternoon Magazine.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Jan Bondesen is the author of Buried Alive, The Terrifying History of Our Most Primal Fear. It's a new book published by W.W. Norton and Company.